Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
David has dropped me in. I am doing the intro once again. Melinda, welcome to the show. I'm not even going to introduce David because I hate him because of this reason. But
that's right. I did the same last time, so not on purpose.
Melinda, welcome to the show once again. It's been a while we had you on our show. I think it's been probably, what, 8-9 months we covered the Brisbane market?
Yeah, it's been about that long. It's nice to be back. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. And I've got my wonderful co-host, David.
So we've got three states today. We got New South Wales, Queensland, and
I'm sure Melbourne still is the most livable on the charts.
Well, you're going to have that argument with Melinda today, mate, let me tell you. she's not letting it go so easily.
I'll enter that argument. I've got a very strong opinion on livability in Brisbane.
There you go.
Look, guys, it's not me saying it. It's the stats, right? We go by the numbers. It's pure stats that I'm going by. And you can check that for the last whatever number of years. But anyways, without wasting too much time, a lot been happening over the last few months in the real estate space due to COVID restrictions, whether it's the rental vacancies or whether it's the numbers plummeting due to obvious reasons. So the purpose of today's podcast was to cover the Brisbane market. It has been in the limelight for almost 5 years now that it's going to pick up. We wanted to obviously have your take on it, what's happening on the ground, because you guys are doing a lot of purchasing. So maybe give us a bit of stats on what's happening up there.
Yeah, well, look, I think that coming into the pandemic, Brisbane was a really strong market. We had really strong buyer demand, and most properties that we were looking at on behalf of clients were going to multiple offers. So there were far more buyers than there were sellers. So it was a very, very strong seller's market. Now, obviously, in the early weeks of March, people were sort of aware that something was brewing, but it wasn't impacting us until the government really said, hey, let's stop. Sport was cancelled, open homes, everything happened so suddenly. And I think that that induced a lot of panic. And as a result of that, what we saw in the property market here in Brisbane is that buyers just retreated, and so did sellers. Everything literally stalled. Now, I believe there were 3 or 4 weeks in that time where potentially some sellers had already committed to a purchase and they had listed their properties for sale, and there were opportunities at that time to pick up properties where their sellers may have felt quite stressed because of the circumstances. But since then, I know by the time we got to Easter Sunday, the listing volumes had reduced 27% here in Brisbane. So things had really, really retreated. But subsequent to that, from about mid-April onward, there's been some more positivity. And I think that there's been a very strong correlation with the number of coronavirus cases that have been diagnosed here in Queensland. From the 5th of April, we've really seen less than 13 cases every day since, and we've been tracking with zero cases for a number of days now. So consumer confidence has continued to pick up, and that's aligned with buyer confidence. It's taken a little longer for sellers to come back, and through a lot of communication that we've had with selling agents, we're finding now that sellers are becoming more confident. Over the last 3 weeks, we've seen a slight increase in the number of properties that have been brought to the market, and therefore, we see that this is going to continue as the pandemic plays out.
Okay. Have your buying style or strategy changed due to this whole COVID situation of what's happened? Maybe a lot of people working from home kind of thing, and no more tourists and all that stuff. Does that really affect the style of the strategy that you guys have been making the purchases in the past, or it's more or less the same still?
Yeah, well, it did change significantly there when open homes and auctions were cancelled. Now, typically here in Brisbane, we don't see a lot of properties sell via auction. Our most common method of sale is via by private treaty, where you a property is listed for sale and you have the opportunity to negotiate on that property. So things really slowed down when you couldn't even go and inspect a property, and that was even hard for us as buyers agents, not being able to monitor real-time demand because we had no idea. We couldn't couldn't meet in groups to go through a property through open homes. We could still go through properties at one-on-one inspections, which is what we typically do anyway, but we always follow that up with the open home to see what the real-time demand is, and that helps us with a negotiation strategy. So I think that, you know, as the buyers have come back, we're starting to now see in Queensland from the 1st of June, we can have open homes with up to 20 groups through again. That's a new change that we'll see the impact of this weekend. But even up until, you know, the most recent Saturday, we've had to line up now to get into properties and wait outside. So the demand is still there. It's controlled by the restrictions that are in place. But it's not uncommon for quality properties to be in a multiple offer situation again here in Brisbane. So, you know, auction clearance rates are not something we typically rely upon to tell us a lot about the Brisbane market. Unlike Sydney and Melbourne, it's not, you know, as common to rely on that as an indicator for market performance. What we are able to determine by being on the ground is how many properties are going to multiple offer. And when you start to assess the time on the market in hours rather than days for certain properties, you know that the market is starting to heat up again. And, you know, we purchased a property that was off market just this week, and it was hours on market, not days on market. So there were that many buyers on it, even in the off market space. So that's something that there's been a bit more activity in that space more recently, mm-hmm. because a lot of sellers have wanted to test the sale off market before they commit to the expense of bringing a property to market. So there's been a few changes in the way that we deal and transact. But I think that as confidence improves, and we've seen the numbers with consumer confidence for 9 weeks straight, we've seen improvements in that space, we're going to see sellers wanting to bring their properties to the market because they know that if they do that, potentially they'll get a better price because of the competition created by the buyers.
Mm-hmm. So are you currently seeing a seller's market because just the number of stock available on the market is so little and there's a whole pool of buyers who wants to get into the market? Is that why it's currently a seller's market in
your
opinion?
Yeah, it's typically. Yeah, like a seller's market is driven when there's low supply and high right. demand. And yeah, stock levels are still much lower than they were 12 months ago. Mm. And as I mentioned, up until Easter, 27% below. But even last year, we were in the lead up to a federal election and we had low stock. So, you know, we're actually in a really contracted market. And it will be nice to see that, you know, we become more balanced, hopefully, in the coming weeks. But that's going to come with confidence. And I think here in Brisbane, we're certainly seeing that. We're seeing some of the stats from the real estate group that are coming out are showing that the listing, the number of viewers per listing is starting to increase significantly, which indicates that buyers are being more active. And listing early indicators, according to CoreLogic, also show that real estate agents are starting to complete more CMA reports or comparative market analysis reports, which are typically the instrument that they provide to sellers when they're at pre-listing meetings. So all of the early indicators show positive signs. And the interviews that we've been doing with agents have also confirmed that the majority of these sellers are not distressed sellers. They're just sellers that had planned to sell their home in the early part of 2020, but given the pandemic and the chaos that COVID-19 caused in all of our lives, they simply put their plans on hold, and now they're starting to actually revisit the plan and, you know, move forward with the plan because, hey, things aren't as bad as what they could have been.
And based on your conversation with your with real estate agents, who are the buyers? Are they the first home buyers, the owner-occupier upgraders, or are they investors currently looking to get into the market?
That is a great question, and the answer is quite variable depending on the location within Brisbane. Yep. So I've had a number of conversations with Veronica, who runs Airlisting, which is an online platform similar to realestate.com. They have seen a huge uptick in the interest from first home buyers in brand new house and land sort of that market. That's not a market that we're active in. So that has been a market that has been fairly active. In the inner city suburbs of Brisbane and certain pockets that we're active in, we've what we saw throughout the worst of coronavirus and through the initial weeks of the recovery were the owner occupiers have shown the greatest amount of depth. They've been very, very active. And I think that there's been a big hangover of buyers who weren't successful in purchasing before the pandemic hit us. And they've just come back into the market. But I would say in the last 3 weeks that investors are starting to trickle back in as well. There's a lot more confidence from investors. Certainly our inquiry has picked up again. And people are taking an approach of, you know, okay, it's not as bad as it could have been. Even the economic reports that are coming out, they're not as bad as everybody expected. The unemployment rate was 6.2%. That was not as bad as what was originally predicted. So even the government are looking at revisiting their JobKeeper package because it's not as bad as we once thought it would be. I think just with the announcements that are coming in relation to the building stimulus as well, that is also going to be positive for the property market as a whole. But I know here in Brisbane, the ability to, you know, renovate homes, especially with our traditional Queenslander, tin and timber homes are very easy to renovate. You can lift, you can extend without too much trouble. So meeting those thresholds for $150,000 in a renovation, that's going to provide a lot more stimulus to the market as well and force value into some suburbs to manufacture some capital growth, if that makes sense, because that's what causes gentrification.
So if no more curveballs are thrown on the economy, what's the crystal ball looking like in terms of the property growth?
I wish I could predict with certainty exactly what's going to happen. I'm not one that likes to say this is exactly what we're going to expect. But what we can do is look at the fundamentals and we can understand what they might be telling us. And in relation to Brisbane, you know, the construction commencements have really collapsed. In Queensland, I don't have the number with me, but from our peak unit construction, which was back in 2016, we're about 57% down on construction commencements. It's something as high as that, which indicates that our future pipeline of supply for new dwellings is going to be much, much lower than it has been in previous years. So when we're looking at what's going to happen to property values, we have to look at the balance between supply and demand. So when we overlay low new stock coming to the market simply because building is collapsing, and then we look at low listing volumes, we've got a really tight market and we can't see that that's going to change anytime in the future. There's a lot of people that are talking about this cliff that apparently we're going to be reaching when all of the government stimulus is pulled. Now, there's some commentators that are predicting price collapses. Even they are readjusting some of their forecasts in relation to property as a result of a lot of the government response. So we don't see that there's going to be a lot of forced sellers here in Brisbane at that time. In fact, when you look at the number of people that have taken a repayment pause, the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank, and these are some stats that I just like to share, he said that out of 74,000 customers, out of their entire customer cohort, 74,000 had taken up the offer to actually pause their repayments. And that's out of a total of 1.8 million customers. So it equates to 4% of the total customer base. And the other important thing that, you know, makes that relevant is that the Commonwealth Bank holds about 24 to 25% of the total market share of all, you know, people that hold a mortgage here in Australia. So it's fairly safe to rely on this data as representative. And if you look at the value of residential property across all of Australia, at the end of April, CoreLogic posted that the residential real estate sector is valued at about $7.1 trillion. And the outstanding mortgage debt on those properties is $1.83 million. So remember, everybody that has a home doesn't necessarily have a mortgage. So the ABS data then indicates that the total loan-to-value ratio of the debt across all outstanding mortgages in Australia is just 25.7%. So it's actually quite low in relation to the value of that asset class. You know, we're really talking small numbers when we're looking at the proportion of those who have applied for mortgage relief. And, you know, without going through every number to get to the final, you know, conclusion, I can tell you that it represents just 1.4% or 1.48% of the total stock available. That is the group of people that have currently applied for mortgage deferrals.
For holiday, yep.
So, so even if we assume that everyone that's applied for some of these, you know, interest rate deferrals, et cetera, every single one of those has to bring their properties to the market, I don't believe that that small percentage is going to be large enough to cause, you know, a distressed selling situation because the buyer depth is so high. So there's some numbers and they relate to all of Australia, but it's certainly something that we see here in Brisbane. We are more affordable as well. So even the rate of mortgage debt compared to the value of the property is actually lower because the value of our properties is significantly lower. So that's the supply side. I just don't see huge supply coming to the market anytime soon. But as I've mentioned, there's a lot of buyers out there and the buyers have been hungry. And now that we're starting to see some of those investors moving back into the market, they're being fueled by the yields that we're able to achieve up here in Brisbane, as well as the capital growth prospects, because, you know, we've got this huge once-in-a-generation type of infrastructure development happening right now, which is being put in place to support the accelerating population growth. And yes, populations are closed. Borders are closed, so there's no population growth at the moment. But normally we receive the majority of our population growth from interstate migration. So who knows how that's going to change after the pandemic as well. So there's a lot of things that contribute to the demand for property, and population's one, affordability is another, lifestyle is another. Very, very low interest rates provides accessibility to credit. That's another that's stimulating the demand side. And now we've got all of this stimulus coming into the market to encourage people to spend money on housing.
Are there any specific types of properties, Melinda, that are being impacted due to less tourism, obviously less students? And are there any particular parts within the Brisbane market that people should be careful of due to these changes?
Yeah, like we've experienced, if you've read the media headlines, some have been partially accurate. So there has been a spike in vacancy in certain parts of Brisbane. The CBD, for example, has a vacancy rate of over 11% at the moment. Now, we've done some internal analysis on the postcodes in Brisbane that have seen a significant spike in their vacancy rate since the COVID-19 came into play. And what we found is that those locations are all typically high density unit or areas that are dominated by high density unit developments. They are not the areas that are low density housing. So there is some risk to property investors that are looking for those higher density type of dwellings. And that's something to be aware of if you are looking for a cash flow play, because a lot of people buy those just to get a decent cash flow. But cash flow needs to, you know, be relative to the yields that you'll get. And the yield is all relative to how many weeks in the year you've got a tenant in place. So that's an at-risk area within Brisbane at the moment. There's also some indications where there's some mortgage distress in a couple of postcodes. The Australian Financial Review just published some data yesterday, Jim Boomba being at risk. There's also risk of people not being able to meet their rental repayments, and those areas were Ipswich and Springfield. So, you know, when we look at locations and selecting suburbs for people to invest in, you've got to assess the type of risk associated with an area, which involves, you know, not just looking at what the current rental yield is, because that's so variable. You've got to assess who lives there, what is the demographic, what has been the trend for the property price growth, what has been the trend for the rental yield. And, you know, what is the future supply of properties in that area look like? Because you're wanting to minimise risk, and they're the sorts of things that obviously getting some professional advice can really help an investor to select an investment grade location and not put themselves at risk during these sorts of times, which are obviously unprecedented.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. What are your picks at the moment in the Brisbane market, the ones that you personally, as a helping investors out in this space, the ones that you guys are actively looking at, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, look, Brisbane provides a lot of opportunity at the moment, in my opinion. Look, without disclosing information that we obviously, you know, clients pay us to share with them, we actually focus on locations that are completely land banked, so there's no future potential for land supply. But they're located in areas where there's easy access to employment hubs, and the way we work may change in the future given what we've just all been through as a nation, but it's still going to be important for people to be able to access the CBD, the airports, and other locations where typically, you know, educational institutions, things like that. We also look for locations where you've got a really good balance between owner-occupiers and investors in that suburb. So you want to make sure you've got high owner-occupier appeal. And when you've got a high proportion of owner-occupiers, that's consistent with the traditional buyer spread being around 70% of buyers are owner-occupiers and about 30% are investors. You're wanting to buy in a suburb that has a similar spread, because if you're buying in a suburb where 60% of the suburb are investors, then your property is competing with a lot of other properties when it becomes vacant, and that's going to increase your risk as an investor and potentially impact on your yield, because you're going to have longer vacancy periods. So there's a few things that we would focus on. I mean, we have a 40-point checklist to select location and property within that location, so there's a lot more than that, but I guess that helps some of your listeners to understand some of the things that you should look at when selecting an investment grade location. Sometimes it doesn't always come down to the data that is a little bit retrospective as well. It also comes down to what's happening right now on the ground, because we want to make sure when we're turning up to an open home that there's a lineup to get in, because if that property is an in-demand property, it's going to achieve a premium price. And when you go to sell as an investor, you want to get the maximum value for your property as well. So choosing a property that appeals to the widest possible buyer group is also a very good investment strategy.
A question about negotiation in that case, Melinda. I mean, yeah, really good points, by the way. Thank you for sharing with our listeners. But if you're looking at properties that's got a line up outside and you know there's going to be a lot of competition, how are you able to ensure that you're getting the best possible price or fair value for your buyers in that case?
Yeah, it's a great question, because, you know, buyers ask me all the time, people that inquire to use our services quite often say, will you be able to negotiate, you know, a significant portion off the asking price for me? And I say, well, I could if we're buying in an area where there's no other buyers. However, if we are buying in an area where there are multiple buyers, Queensland legislation requires us to follow a very specific process, and it's called a multiple offer process. So you only get one chance to put your best and final offer forward. So the way we work with clients in that situation is, you know, if a property's got seven buyers or five buyers or even three buyers, you don't necessarily have the opportunity to put in a lowball offer and negotiate. So you have to put in an offer that is fair and reasonable based on the comparative sales in the area. And because we have access to not only just assess what's sold and how much it's sold for, but how does it make it comparable to the property of interest? So is the land size the same? Is the land zoning the same? Is the potential for future development the same? Is the quality of the asset the same in terms of, you know, the internal fittings and fixtures? And because we know so many properties, because we go through so many properties, we can determine with a fairly high degree of accuracy where the value lies in a property. And then we've got great relationships with sales agents as well. So obviously, when we are negotiating before we put in an offer, we're always positioning clients for a price point based on the comparative sales, you know, so it's all factual based, and that's how we negotiate with agents. And we're asking agents, you know, what comparative sales have you relied upon to come to the value of this property? And sales agents should be able to provide that. Some don't. and that's going to make it a little bit harder. But if you're able to get that information as a buyer, then you're getting an indication of where the value might lie in that property. And look, at the end of the day, we never tell our clients what to pay. We'll provide an appraisal range for our clients, and then it's up to them to select their walk-away price if it's a multiple offer situation. If it's a home buyer, sometimes, you know, they don't want to miss out. We can't tell them what to pay. If they are an investor, then we're doing projections to help them understand if they increase their offer by $5,000, what is the real cost on a week-by-week basis to that investor for that higher price up front, so that we can quantify what the impact will be to their cash flow on a week-by-week basis. And I think when it comes to investing, you're wanting to buy an investment-grade asset. So we just need to quantify what is the real cost on a weekly basis, because borrowing $5,000 more upfront might only equate to an extra $5 a week, you know, to hold the property. So it's just about quantifying the associated risk, and that's how we work. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Got another question, by the way. The inner circle or the inner city type of, let's say, for example, within 5 kilometres radius, I know Sydney and Melbourne have been pretty much smashed because those are the top price range. So I think there has been quite a significant reductions in those, both from price range-wise and also rental income-wise, because people, if they lost their job, then they could not afford to pay rent or that premium rent to be able to live so close to city, right? Has the inner ring in Brisbane been impacted in the last few months due to COVID-19? I would assume that the middle or the outer ring, maybe around the 15-kilometre range, probably wouldn't be impacted as much because they're lower priced, the rent is much more affordable. Certainly my properties haven't been impacted much to that degree, but I'm curious about the inner ring, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are also curious about the inner ring. Has it actually dropped much?
It's a great question, and I think that the answer is a little bit variable based on the exact location. So okay. I've spoken to agents, the only agents that we've spoken to that have indicated that there seems to be a price softening is over in the Bulimba Hawthorne area, which is the inner east, and that was just anecdotally an agent suggested that about a 5 to 10% drop has been seen in the expectations of of the buyers. So it doesn't mean that the properties have sold at a lower amount, but the buyer expectation had dropped. In agents in the inner north, you know, there's been indications that, you know, buyers have had lower expectations, but they soon meet the market because they know that there's enough buyer depth that there's not going to be a fall in the sales value. And agents have certainly said if people don't have to sell, they're just not selling. So, you know, they're not taking price cuts, and therefore there's no recorded sales that are showing a reduction in the asking price. So, you know, there's no evidence in the data. The CoreLogic data just came out yesterday to show that there's no price falls, and we haven't really seen that fall in the higher price point like Sydney and Melbourne have reported in the data. It's not been so evident here in Brisbane, and that's possibly because we've got, you know, our higher price point would be a $1.5 million property. That's not a high price for Sydney and Melbourne. So I guess it's probably a lot more stable in good times and bad times here in Brisbane, and probably because of the very low volume of properties that have transacted during the worst of COVID-19, it's probably still too early to tell if there's been a material shift, because in the next couple of months, if we sort of look back retrospectively at data, that's going to be able to give us more of an indication. Most settlements are 30 to 60 days here in Brisbane. So we're really only seeing data at the end of May for what actually happened in April. And there wasn't much happening in the most part of April. So, you know, once we get to the end of June, we might see, well, what's happened throughout May, and that might give us a bit more of an indication. So we're just sort of relying on anecdotal evidence at the moment, and we haven't seen any shifts at this stage.
Any thoughts on the rental market down the line? Do you see the rents dropping? And the second is it going to be affecting the inner market as well, which is the more prime market?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that it's dependent to some extent on the location. Brisbane's not one property market. There's obviously a number of different areas within Brisbane that will all perform in different ways. And I think it's also dependent on the property type. I do think that there's going to be rent drops in the unit market, and we've already seen that because the vacancies have spiraled, and if people do want to get a tenant, they're going to have to discount their rate. It's high supply, it's low demand, you've got to drop your prices. When we were at the worst of COVID-19, and look, we'd had properties that we'd purchased back in February with 60-day settlements, and so I was genuinely concerned for our clients who were settling at the worst as to whether they would get a tenant. So in consultation with their property manager, we agreed that the best approach would be to provide a discounted rate just to secure someone over the worst of the pandemic, and then you can renegotiate at the completion of a, you know, 6 or a 9 month rental term. So we were certainly doing some rental price discounts. What I said to our investor clients at that point in time is we can quantify this risk. We can actually account for a $20 per week reduction. If your property's on the market $20 per week less than other properties in the area, you'll get a tenant quicker, and then you're going to have reduced vacancy. So we could quantify that out over a 6 month tenancy term and factor that into the projections that helped them understand what that would do to their weekly holding cost. I see that levelling out more now in a lot of the investment grade locations. We're not having to do as much price discounting to secure a tenant because there's fewer properties available. And in fact, some areas in Brisbane, vacancy rates have declined, you know, between when COVID-19 became a problem and now. So it's very area specific. And I think in areas where vacancy rates have spiked, you definitely will see a lot more price discounting. And typically, as I mentioned earlier, that will be in those areas where you've got higher density dwellings. Will that have an impact in the high-end rental market? Potentially, yes. I think that the middle and the lower sort of rental markets seem to be a little bit more insulated. But again, it does come down to the availability of properties, the supply and demand equation. It's the same in sales. It's the same in rental. If there's only three properties that are available for rent in a typical suburb, then you can maintain, you know, your asking rents. And SQM Research just this week put out their forward indicators for asking rents. And, you know, in the last week, they've increased across Brisbane. So it shows that there's a market that is continuing to strengthen as well. And I'd say as we move forward, there's going to be less price discounting on the rental space as well. We've certainly seen it for the last few months, but I think that that's starting to improve.
Sure. Switching gears a little bit, Melinda, having some fun here. Let's have some fun.
Sure. Like it.
Aliens, believer or not?
Oh, aliens. No, I don't believe in aliens.
You don't believe in aliens?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yes, you're not going to ask why not?
I was about to say it's a big universe.
It is a big universe.
There's a lot of property on different planets.
Maybe there is. Maybe my mind just doesn't stretch that far to allow for those sorts of crazy sort of thoughts. I don't know, but no, I'm not a believer, rightly or wrongly so.
Brisbane's already a very big city. I think that's enough for you to worry about so far. Yeah.
Inflation or deflation? Or deflation leading to hyperinflation, whatever, however you want to take it.
Well, I believe in inflation. I believe in, you know, regardless of what that relates to, building things up, like, you know, start small, get bigger. I believe in inflation as a term, if I'm to pick between the two, absolutely.
So why would you say inflation is a good thing?
Well, I was taking it more from a general term. I mean, not so much from an economic perspective. I was just taking it from the terminology of, you know, inflation is something that, you know, you can build things up. And if we've got inflation, we've got strength in the economy, we've got, you know, a robust environment around us. And I'm all for, you know, upward movement as opposed to deflation, which is just, it just seems such a somber word and such a somber environment.
Last one, crypto, here to stay or a fad?
Oh, crypto. I don't know a lot about crypto. I've got friends that dibble in that as an investment class. I think it's here to stay. I think that there's a lot to learn about that. But, you know, for me, it's property every day of the week. I don't want to be speculative in something that I know very little about.
That's all I had. David,
hey, you want to look? Believe or crypto? Let's put it that way. That's what one out of what? But, how many? I lost count now.
but she only invests in property, though.
Oh, that's true. I think you've got to stick to what you know. And what I love about property is that you can force more value into it. You can't do that with shares and crypto and, you know, cash in the bank. Whereas property, you actually can. You can manufacture equity, and that's what I love about property.
Yep. No, fair enough.
Great. All right. Well, I think that's a wrap for today, isn't it? So thank you, Melinda, for jumping on. I think certainly you give us a lot of insight for the Brisbane market. Jazz, I reckon we'll bring her back on in a few months down the track just to give us another further update. I reckon after the COVID pandemic has gone over, and let's see how that market's performing a few months down the track. Okay, so thank you very much for coming on again. For our listeners, if you like our show, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating or leave any comments if you like about what you like today or what you don't like today. Otherwise, we'll see you again in next episode. Thank you.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.